Gopadasayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturam Kijai Avadipdam Kijai Jagannathasami Kijai Yuvanamai Kijai Shimadilasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai Gaur Premananda Hari 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 Gaur. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. Okay. So today is a special day in the Vaishnava calendar, so before reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, we want to speak about several different things. First of all, Tulsi Shaligram Vivaha, which we're going to be speaking about Sunday during the Sunday program, so I'm not going to speak about that today. It's the last day of Kartik and also the Rasa dance that Krishna acted on the last day of Kartik. And finally, it's the appearance day of Srila Anambarka Charya. So I'm going to speak about him this morning. So a little bit of history for those of you who don't know. There are four sampradayas. Sampradaya means discipline succession. And these four sampradayas are the bona fide sources of spiritual knowledge. And the statement in the Vedic literatures is sampradaya vidhi haye mantras te nishpala mataha. That if one receives spiritual knowledge or any knowledge that's not coming down the cyclic succession, it's not effective. Now, the reason it's not effective, even though it may be true knowledge, is the same reason why something, an electrical socket, what you call a PowerPoint in Europe, is not effective unless it's connected to the powerhouse. It may look the same, it may act the same, but it has no electricity. Is not connected to the powerhouse. So the system that Krishna has given us, specifically in the Bhagavad Gita, in the fourth chapter, he talks about yevam parampara praptam imam rajashayo virahu, that this knowledge is passed down through, what is it? Oh, through disciplic succession. And that is our method of receiving knowledge. It's called the descending process. The ascending process is imperfect. Ascending means to come up. Ascending means that we rely on our senses, we rely on our imperfect inductive processes, we rely on our history, we rely on what we've heard from our parents, we rely on what we hear from the news and the internet. That's the ascending process. Descending process means that we receive knowledge from above, and that knowledge is perfect. Namam Tisakshat Bhagavat Pranitam. So, therefore, we have these four separate successions. The Brahma Sampradaya, which we're members of, Tamamad Gaudiya Sampradaya. We have the Rudra Sampradaya, and we have the Kumara Sampradaya, and we have the Lakshmi Sampradaya. And each and every one of those Sampradayas has a modern acharya too. Of course, the first person in every sampradaya is Krishna or Vishnu. And then you have Lakshmi after that, then you have the Kumaras after that, then you have Shiva after that, or you have Lord Brahma after that. Okay. So today, we're talking about Nimbarkacharya, who is the head of the modern day head, that is, of the Kumara sampradaya. So we're going to speak a little bit about his history. I made some notes about his history. Of course, he's very important for us in the Madhva Gaudiya, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, because as far as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is concerned, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the teacher in the modern day age of our Sampradaya, as far as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is concerned, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu drew certain philosophical understandings from Nimbarkacharya. And those philosophical understandings were not present in the other sampradayas. And what philosophical understandings he brought forth was the understanding of Srimati Radharani's superlative position, and secondly, the understanding of the gopis' relationship with Krishna and Radha and Krishna conjugal loving affairs. So you really don't find that present in the other sampradayas. I mean, for example, in Sri Sampradaya, the Lakshmi Sampradaya, under the jurisdiction of Sripad Ramanujacharya, you find primarily the worship of Lakshmi Narayan. Just like you hear if you go to the Srirangam temple, Om Namo Narayanaya Namaha, Om Namo Narayanaya Namaha. Those of us who went to that temple, I think Sabi also was there. Then you hear this continually. And of course, in our sampradaya, in our branch of the sampradaya, following Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we are primarily chanting what? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And he taught his followers a specific version of the Maha Mantra. It's a little bit different than ours, but it's... let's see, Radhe Sham, Radhe Sham, Sham Sham, Radhe, Radhe, and what was it, I wrote down the second part, it's Radha Krishna, Radha Krishna, Radha Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Radha Radha, and then Radhe Sham, Radhe Sham, Sham Sham, Radhe Radhe. So that's his version of the Maha Mantra. It's not wrong. It's just a different version of the Maha Mantra. So, and sometimes you hear in Radhakund, they chant something very, very similar to that. Radhakund is a place that's right close to Govardhan. It's about, probably half a kilometer away from Govardhan if you go off the path, right near the Kushala Sarovara. And close to there is the place where Nimbarkacharya actually resided near Govardhan, Nimagong, it was called. And so, here's his history. So, Sripad, so I took the Maha Mantra, did that. Sripad Nimbarkacharya, he was born in somewhere between the 11th and 12th centuries, that means 10-something or 11-something. And there's many different stories. It's actually quite a controversial understanding, like when he was actually born. Some historians say he was born around 3000 BCE, but generally it's accepted he was born between the 11th and 12th centuries. And he was born in the Dravidian province. As we know, that... most of the, let's say, older acharyas are from the Dravidian provinces. It's called the Pancha Dravida. And he was the son of Aruni and Jayanti. That means his mother and father, or father and mother. And they were Brahmins of the Trailanga order. And he was a great ascetic. And he wrote many books depicting the philosophy of Dvaita Advaita. Now that may be very confusing for you, because Dvaita means dual and Advaita means non-dual or one. And of course that's very similar to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching of Achincha Veda Aveda Tattva, which is the same thing. Achincha means inconceivable. Veda means different, Aveda means non-different. Tattva means basically not just truth, it means something that exists. Like it's a tattva, that is. The word tattva basically means that is. In other words, pointing out, let's say, that is a harmonium. It's there, it's real. So that's what the word tattva means, although oftentimes it's translated as truth. So achincha means, as I said before, inconceivable. So In other words, it's very hard to understand, at least for us, how everything is one and different from Krishna simultaneously. And different metaphors are utilized to explain that, such as the sun and the sunshine. The sunshine is one and the same as the sun. I was hearing a class from Srila Prabhupada this morning about another example, another metaphor that Prabhupada gave, about how everything is coming from Krishna, everything is related with Krishna, and how some things are just dull matter and some things are spiritual matter. And Prabhupada gave the example of a body. It's a very interesting example. Prabhupada said that we have a material body right now, obviously, and we are conscious of what is happening in the body. For example, if I pinch someone, they will feel pain, right? Like if I pinch them like this. So he compared that to the spiritual energy, and he said, but there are parts of the body that if you pinch, you don't feel any pain. Anybody have an example of that? The hair or the nail. Prabhupada used the example of the nail. Like if you hit your nail, I mean, obviously, if you pull it out. But Prabhupada said if you go a little further and you cut your, cuticles or whatever they're called, cut the finger, then it's very painful. So they're all parts of the body, but some parts are just dull, whereas other parts are more conscious or are conscious. But they're all parts of the body. And the Prabhupada said that's the same thing as all the energies are coming from Krishna, Purusha, Shakti, or Vividaiva. All the energies are coming from Krishna, but some of them are the dull material energy, and some of them are the spiritual energies. So, Krishna, Vishnu, Shakti, Pura, Prokta, Sri Drogyatya, Tata, Pura. Avidya, karma, sangyanya, chuchi, or shakti, ishate, threefold energies. There's the spiritual energy, material energy, and the jiva soul, the marginal potency of the Lord. Anyway, so you have these three different energies. And so this dvaita, advaita philosophy taught by Nimbarkacharya is basically the same as the Chinchabeta-beta tattva. Dvaita means dual. Advaita means one, so everything is dvaita and advaita. So you see very, very similar. And actually the teachings of the Acharyas are very similar to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. So the reason he is called Nimbarkacharya, and I sometimes call him Nimaditya-charya. Aditya means sun, Arka means like a light. So what happened is once upon a time, there was a Jain man who came to Nimbarkacharya, and he was residing in Nimgaon near Govardhan. And Nimbarkacharya, he asked the Jain man to take lunch with him, or take dinner, actually, at this particular point. And the Jain man said, "No, I can't do that because it's dark. It's become night already." And so what happened is by his potency, this Nimbarkacharya, he made the sun or bright light appear from a nimba tree. And therefore the Jain had to accept prasadam. So Aditya, so he's called, in other words, Aditya means sun, Arka means light. So Nimbaditya, or Nimbarkacharya. So and there's more interesting stories about him. There's several stories about how he became connected with the Kumaras. And he's also connected with Narada Muni. He took initiation from the Kumaras, and he also took another mantra from Narada Muni. So what happened is he was living at one point near a forest called Dilba Paksha. And a group of Brahmins came to worship Lord Shiva at that particular time. And so Lord Shiva was very pleased by the offering of bilva, or bale leaves, from the tree. And the Brahmins worshiped Lord Shiva in this particular fashion for for a period of a half a month and satisfied Lord Shiva. And Nimbarkacharya is also there doing some worship of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva said to him, at the edge of this forest, I'm going to give you a blessing. Lord Shiva appeared. The four Kumaras, they're the four sons of Lord Brahma who are always depicted as like five-year-olds because they refuse to get married. So these four Kumaras are absorbed in meditation. So you should go and see them and receive transcendental knowledge from them. They are your spiritual masters. And Lord Shiva then disappeared. Nimbarkacharya went to the place that Lord Shiva described. And he saw the four Kumaras shining brilliantly as the sun. And they appeared, it's described, like fire blazing on an altar. They were very young, of course, no more than 5 years of age, because they refused to get married. And Nimbarkacharya saw them wrapped in meditation. They didn't even notice him. And Nimbarkacharya, just feeling shocked to see them, said, Hare Krishna, or Radhe Krishna. And they came out of their meditation, and they opened their eyes, and they saw this ideal devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and asked him, who are you? Why have you come here? And he fell at their feet, and he introduced himself. And actually some of these stories come from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Navadvipa Dham Mahatmya. Sanat Kumar said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, knowing that Kali Yuga is coming, wants you to propagate devotional service to himself. And with this, he has empowered four personalities to do that. And they refer to Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, and Vishnu Swami. And they said that you are the fourth personality. So Lakshmi accepted Ramanuja's disciple, Brahma accepted Madhva, and Ramanuja accepted Vishnu Swami. And this is a quote, meeting you today, I have the good fortune of being able to instruct you. They explained that previously they had been absorbed in Brahman. This is a whole story that's also there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The four Kumaras were absorbed in Brahman, and when they smelled the lotus tulsi leaves, and the lotus flowers offered to the feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then they became devotees, and they wrote a particular literature called the Sanat Kumara Samhita. So Sanat Kumara said, you should take initiation from me. Nimbarka was very ecstatic to hear that. He took initiation, and before that, of course, he ran to take a bath in the Ganges, because that's what you're supposed to do, clean yourself before initiation. And they initiated him into the Radha Krishna mantra. And they instructed him how to worship Radha and Krishna in what's called the Bhava Marg. Marg means path, Bhava means the emotional path. So he began to worship Radha and Krishna according to Sanat Kumara's instruction. And then what happened? This is in the Navadvipa Mahatmya. Soon Radha and Krishna appeared to him and said to him, you are very fortunate, because at this particular juncture he was in Navadvipa. And they explain, we both combine, that's Radha and Krishna, and assume one form as the son of Sachi Devi. At that moment, Radha and Krishna combined and displayed their form of Gauranga. Wow. Seeing this, Nimbarkacharya began to tremble. He said, never have I seen or heard of a form like this. And Radha and Krishna instructed him more about Gauranga, who is Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nayanya, which is Krishna, the mood of Radharani. Instructed him, keep this a secret. When I appear as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is, of course, a little over 500 years ago, then I will, of course he didn't say 500 years ago, but he said in the future, as far as the Bhattacharya is concerned, you will appear as Keshava Kashmiri. Now, some of you may remember that Keshava Kashmiri, he was the conquering pundit who was a follower of Saraswati, the goddess of learning. So in those days, the pundits would go around, pundit means like learned person who is expert in arguing and logic and reasoning, not just arguing for the sake of arguing. And the pundits would go around and they would have arguments or discussions or debates, as you may call it, with others. And whoever won got a Jaya Patra, a certificate of victory. And then they would display this, just like nowadays people have trophies when they win some particular competition, whether it's golf or swimming or debating club. They have some particular certificate or trophy. So he took birth as Keshava Kashmiri, and he was going all around Navadvip, and actually all around Bengal, and challenging different personalities to debates. So when he came to Navadvip, all the other pundits or learned persons basically ran away because they didn't want to debate him because he was so erudite and able to defeat anyone. And he heard about this one expert young boy pundit named Nimai Pundit. And so basically what happened is that Nimai Pundit and him met on the banks of the Ganges, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu challenged him. He asked him to write different verses in glorification of the Ganges. And this Keshava Kashmiri wrote these 100 verses in glorification of the Ganges, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu found some rhetorical or some mistakes in his writings. In other words, he repeated himself. He did too much alliteration. He repeated himself too many times. So this Keshava Kashmiri was just so upset, and that night he had a dream, because he'd never been defeated before, he had a dream that the goddess of learning, Saraswati, appeared to him and said that the reason you lost is you were arguing with my husband. And my husband, of course, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as she revealed that. And Keshava Kashmiri understood that he couldn't have won in a debate with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so then he approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu the next day and bowed down to him and accepted him and remained in Navadvip for some time. And in this way, he had Lord Chaitanya's association, but he kept it secret that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that Keshava Kashmiri, he's actually Nimarkacharya. So that's the reason I told that story. Lord Chaitanya said, keep my identity a secret. In the future, I will begin my Sankirtan movement and I will personally preach, taking the essence of your philosophy and the philosophies of Madhva, Ramanuja, and Vishnu Swami. So that's a little bit of history of Keshava, Nimarkacharya. Another aspect of the history was, because I did some research on this, that Narada Muni gave him the Gopal Mantra, which is the next to the last line of the Gayatri Mantras. Narada Muni taught him the Narada Bhakti Sutra. And Narada Muni resided in Nardakund, which we described before. And let's see. Oh, yes. Also, Nimarkacharya taught this, what's called Parinama Vad. Now, this Parinama Vad is very interesting. Parinama means transformation. There's different philosophies, like the Mayavadis sometimes talk about how the Lord becomes, or Brahman becomes transformed. But we talk about how the Lord's energies become transformed. Anyway, I'm not going to get into the detail about that. And the Mayavadis also have this philosophy, Vivartavad, that the Lord or the Supreme Absolute Truth falls into illusion, therefore we are God, and we fall into illusion. But so anyway, so Nimbarkacharya taught Parinama Vad is the transformation of the Lord's energy. Shakti Parinama Vad. Whereas the Mayavadis, they teach sometimes Brahman Parinama Vad. In other words, the Supreme Brahman becomes transformed. The Supreme Brahman is not transformed. We know from the Upanishad, Om Purnamada Purnamidam, that the Supreme Personality of God is perfect and complete, and He never becomes transformed. But so many complete manifestations emanate from Him, perfect and complete manifestations emanate from Him. So, Nimbarkacharya taught this Parinambhad, which we agree in, and he listed five sadhanas, in other words, practices, in order to achieve the Absolute Truth. The first sadhana was called karma. And I'll unpack that. Karma doesn't mean that he was a karma nuance or anything like that. But he did advocate following the Varnashram system and serving Krishna according to one's side of his nature. And of course, Lord Krishna advocates that in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, everyone become perfect, serving Krishna or acting according to one's nature, whether one's a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. And the second one, the second aspect of the sadhana is called vidya. That means studying the Vedic literatures, understanding and practicing the Vedic literatures. The third sadhana that he taught is called dhyana. Dhyana means meditation or concentration on the Supreme Personality of God. It's not like the modern so-called meditation of be here now, mindfulness like that, but being mindful of Krishna. The next one is called prapati, which means surrender. And of course, he also taught the same surrendering principles, the six surrendering principles that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught, which are accepting everything favorable for serving Krishna, rejecting everything unfavorable, that always understand the Lord is maintaining you, always understand the Lord is protecting you, always being meek and humble, and having no separate interest other than the interest of the Lord. So basically, this is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. And the final aspect of his sadhana is called Guru Pasati, which means actually approaching the Guru and following the Guru's directions. That's a type of prapati or surrender. So these are the teachings of Sripad Nimbarkacharya, whose appearance day it is today. He's a very important personality, as I mentioned before, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu drew his teachings about Radha and Krishna. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna Ramuna Prabhu, and he doesn't have to draw his teachings from anyone. But ostensibly, he drew his teachings from Nimbarkacharya's teachings. And he did this to show us that you shouldn't invent something that doesn't come into Sampradaya. In other words, whatever Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught over 500 years ago was taught in one of the four sampradayas. So he actually amalgamated or took information from all the four sampradayas and presented to us this perfect understanding and practices of Krishna consciousness. Okay, so now we'll go on to Bhagavatam if we have time. We'll have 10 minutes. Unless we have some questions about Nimbarkacharya. Yes.
What was the main scripture in the Vedas that like commented on or followed? Was it the Bhagavatam or?
It's not mentioned that he specifically commented on the Bhagavatam. He didn't write any commentaries on the Bhagavatam, as far as the information I have is concerned. Siddhartha Samhita. He took instruction from this four Kumaras, specifically. I mean, I'm sure that he did read the Bhagavatam because he had information about Radha and Krishna's pastimes. And he has many many, many followers in Braj today. Many, many followers, actually, especially in the Radhakund area. In the Radhakund area, not Radhakund area, I'm sorry, in Barshana, the Barshana area. There's many, many followers in Nimbarkacharya there. And they're always chanting about Radha and Krishna. And I was just there, actually. And there's one friend of ISKCON's who is a very scholarly person, Ramesh Baba, who is actually a follower of Nimbarkacharya. I mean, they have some a little bit of differences as far as some historical data. For example, they'll say that Radharani appeared in Barshana instead of Rahul. And our Goswamis taught that Radharani appeared in Rahul, and that actually makes more sense too, because Krishna did not appear in Nandagon. Krishna appeared in Gokul, which is on the other side. I mean, there's the whole history in the Bhagavatam. And the other side of the Yamuna, the eastern side of the Yamuna, you have Gokul, Brahmananda Ghat, and Dalji, and all these places of Krishna's and Balaram's and Radharani's early pastimes. So they started off there. Then, it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, when the demons were attacking, Nanda Maharaj was thinking, this is not such an auspicious place to live in, so let's move to Vrindavan. Now, sometimes the word Vrindavan is used to indicate all the forests in Braj. And sometimes it's used to indicate the just one of the specific 12 forests, a Vrindavan forest, which is actually the largest forest. But Krishna appeared in Mahavan, which is a different forest. Mahavan is what's happening on the eastern side of the Yamuna River. So then Nanda Maharaj and the residents of Mahavan, including Vrishabhanu and of course Radharani, they all moved across the river with all their bullocks. This is a story in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. They moved across the river and went to Vrindavan. And Vrindavan is sometimes used to indicate the city of Vrindavan, but actually, as I mentioned before, it's the forest. And the Vrindavan forest is quite large. It goes all the way up to Barshana. All the way up to Barshana, all the way up to Govardhan Hill, of course, and encompasses the Yamuna and the present-day city of Vrindavan. And the Yamuna previously went all the way, basically, to Govardhan. You can actually see the Yamuna from Govardhan. And not when I was young, of course. I was talking about previously means over 5,000 years ago. And nowadays, they've paved it all with concrete, unfortunately, in Vrindavan, in the city of Vrindavan. Hopefully the rest of Braj can be saved. And right now, there's a very nice chief minister in Uttar Pradesh, and most of Braj is in Uttar Pradesh. Some of it is in Rajasthan. There's a very nice chief minister, and this chief minister is arranging for a lot of the buildings to be cleared away to protect the sanctity of Braj. Those of us who went to Vrindavan in the early days of the 1970s will remember the peacocks and the and just the birds and the sand paths going around Vrindavan. You used to be able to circumambulate Vrindavan just walking on sand but not see a car and practically not even see a bicycle rickshaw. But recently I was there, I mean just recently, a few days ago, I was in the city of Vrindavan, and it's all concrete going around the whole city. In fact, they're having accidents in which people get severely hurt, have to go to the hospital, maybe even die, because the buses and cars and everything, they hit each other. And that happened right at Madan Mohan Temple, which previously was the Coward Boy Path. Remember, in the early days, you'd stand on this hill called Dwalasiddhicha, it means 12 sons, which the Madan Mohan Temple's at, and just look at this beautiful sight of the Coward Boy Path and all the different bathing places that the Goswamis and others utilized. And now it's just concrete and stores and new buildings and everything like that. It's a shame what's happening to Vrindavan, the city of Vrindavan. Actually, we tried to do the parikrama around Vrindavan, visit the major temples, but we could only get to Radha-Damodar before it became too intense for us to continue. Because it just all the noise and even the monkeys are getting more ferocious because all their habitats are being taken away. So they start attacking. They take even people's bead bags, money out of the pockets, mobile phones. I mean, glasses they've been taking for years. And it's not good. It's not good. These holy places should be protected and renovated. And at least the chief minister of Uttar Pradesh is attempting to do that. He passed some laws recently that in certain places in Braj, meat eating and intoxication are illegal, which is very nice. Hopefully that spreads throughout all of Braj. So there are some steps being made in the right direction in that regard. So, any other questions? Yes?
Yeah, the same thing is happening to America also. I was born in 62, and I remember when seeing how things were, black and white TV, families stuck together back then, and you go to the school without locking your door, kids were safe at night if they stayed in the house, you know, 9 o'clock after about dark, it was safe. Now things have also changed in this country that almost every decade ago was worse. So the same thing is happening down there, what happened here.
Yeah.
And it's happening throughout the world.
Yes, but at least in America we preserve our so-called holy... We don't have holy places. But, you know, like George Washington sleeps in a particular place, you know, they make it nice, or Gettysburg. There's some respect for history in America. Whereas, you know, in India, of course, it's changing now. I said with Dichanath, you know, Yogi Dichanath. That's changing to a certain extent, but needs a lot of work with the garbage being thrown everywhere. There's a lot of work that's required in Braj, cleaning up the Jamuna and so many things like that. So, anyway, just a little bit about Vrindavan. Yes, any other questions or comments? We have about a minute and a half before greeting the deities. So, anyway, today is the appearance day of Nimbarkacharya. And he's called Nimbarka Acharya because he caused the sun to shine from a nimba tree. That's why it's called Nimbarka Acharya.
So Arka is sun.
Arka means light. You know, big, big, bright light. Aditya, it's called Nimba Aditya Acharya too.
Because Aditya is sun.
Yeah, Aditya is sun. Nimba Aditya Acharya, Nimbarka Acharya. Those are two names of his. And he appeared, as I mentioned before, as Keshava Kashmiri in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Okay, on that happy note, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.